recording though.
Yeah. Okay. You're cooking. Hey,
Jim. Well, good. At least we know the microphone's working. So, welcome to all of you to Pumping Iron, and we first want to thank our sponsor, LexisNexis, for helping make this possible. I want to thank you all for waiting to enjoy the beautiful day when we get through with this presentation and staying with us today. So let me see if I can make this switch to get our slide come up. But we're really going to be looking at what it takes for news libraries, small libraries, medium and large libraries to survive and thrive in this challenging world that we're in. And I've seen this quote at least once in another presentation, the Charles Darwin quote about evolution and the fact that, you know, we may be, as one of the cancel programs was called, the smartest guy in the room, but we also have to be responsive to change and we have to be adaptable. Our CE on Sunday was really a great session, and it looked at the challenges that we face in the news industry, and I think you all know what they are. I'm sure you talk about them as much in your organization as we do in ours. Customers are changing how they consume news and information, and we know the impact that that's having on advertising revenues. The world has changed with the internet, with Google, and we do have those, for those of us who are in public companies, those pesky stockholders, and so we have to learn how to, we have to remember that we're a business and we have to make money. So how do we do that in this situation? To help answer that, we did a survey, a 45-question survey to the members of NewsLib, and we asked library directors or someone the library director designated to fill out those questions. We got 70 responses, which I thought was really a great number of responses, and the answers themselves were very thoughtful and very insightful. And what we want to do today is share with you some of what we learned from you, and we'd like to thank all of you who participated in the survey, because I think if we are going to survive and thrive, we really have to collaborate and share what works. And as we go along, we're going to introduce ourselves, and before we start talking about our particular part of the survey. But first, let me introduce our panelists. We have Deborah Boddy, who is the editor of News Research and Archives for the Chicago Tribune. Deborah, as you probably know, has been at the Tribune for more than 4 years. And for 12 years, she was at CNN, where she was the Director of Online Training and Development and Director of News Research. She's also been a researcher at the Star Tribune in Minneapolis. She has a master's degree from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and she's been active in SLA and was our division chair in 2000-2001. Ann Holcomb is the newsroom librarian at the Kalamazoo Gazette, a daily afternoon paper with and 6 regional weeklies serving southwestern Michigan. Ann grew up in Kalamazoo, attended Aldine College. College and the University of Michigan School of Information. She obtained her master's degree specializing in archives and records management and has worked as the librarian at the Kalamazoo since 2004. Mike Myers is the director of news research at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And prior to going to St. Louis, Mike was the news research director in the South Florida Sun Sentinel. During the course of his 20-year career in newspapers, Mike has worked in three divisions, editorial, technology, and interactive, and at several different newspapers, the Tampa Tribune, St. Petersburg Times, USA Today, and the Washington Post. And as Mike said in his bio, as you may be able to tell from his hairline, he gathers no moss. And I'm Jenny Everett. I've been at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution for almost 12 years. And prior to that, I was at the law director at the Commercial Appeal in Memphis, Tennessee. And I obtained my MLS many years ago at the University of Alabama. So first, I'll start with a little mini-profile of my operation, and we'll each do the same as we go along. We're a privately owned company. We have a large newsroom, roughly 500 people. And right now we have a very strong focus on online and print integration. We talk about it all the time. We do it all the time. We're, like many newspapers, developing a portfolio of products, and we're looking at what that portfolio might be. We own a weekly Spanish language newspaper. We have a new monthly publication aimed at women, and we're, you know, looking at any number of other things that I know a lot of your organizations are looking at. The budget's tight. And we're looking at how the staff is deployed. And we have not had any layoffs so far, so that is good. We are four metro libraries and a number of small newspapers in the chain that do not have libraries. But the four metro librarians do stay in touch rather frequently. I report to the Internet General Manager. We have a 24-person staff, which has remained relatively stable. We do kind of change the mix of full-time and part-time from time to time. We have a supervisor for each area of our operation, including the two archive managers, a research manager, our fee-based service manager, and you got the picture. We're responsible for permissions and content licensing. As you can imagine, since my boss is the IGM for AJC.com, we're very heavily involved in web operations. And our overnight archivist posts what we call a print edition to AJC.com, and that's the same feed that we send to all of our commercial services. We have image archivists who are archiving both PDFs and photos and graphics that are in print and online. We also do a lot of training in the newsroom, and we have something called Cox Academy. Each employee is obligated to take 20 hours of training every year. Managers are required to take 30 hours of training every year, and we in News Research provide some of those courses. People, we have outside speakers, including Vicki McCarter. I don't know if she's in here, but Vicki visited us recently. So we're trying to retrain ourselves and retool. And then our fee-based operation. But let's get to the really interesting stuff, which is all about you guys. So one of the things that we found in the survey was the correlation of newsroom staff and library staff. And it was fascinating to me to see that more than half of us are in small newsrooms and with a library staff of 1 to 5. The mid-range newsroom size and library size correlate much, but as we get larger, you see that the library size doesn't quite keep up with the newsroom staff size. And this is also an interesting finding, I think. It looks like, to me, that newsroom staff started taking a hit earlier, I think if I'm interpreting this correctly, than library staff. But it also looks as if a lot of the there's not a whole lot of cutting left to do. A number of respondents said that, in fact, with the survey, we had to add an answer to this particular question, because a couple of people sent a message and said, we have not been able to fill a position in the past 5 years, so we added the 5-year interval there. Most of us report to upper management, which is good news, and it's really a variety of particular positions. And as you can see, there were numerous other examples, but still in that same upper management group for the most part. And now I'm going to turn the questions over to everybody.
Thanks, Jenny. I'm going to start off by giving you a quick overview of the Chicago Tribune Research Center also. I've got 18 full-time FTEs on my staff and a new temporary position that will be with me over the summer. Researchers providing online research and more traditional reference services. I think you're all familiar with that service. I've got a team of 4 photo archivists that are responsible for daily archiving of photos into our Merlin system. And right now, a team of 6 text archivists that work an overnight shift and deliver content to our database vendors and to our website using our Safe Archive system. Temporary position that I'm bringing back in is actually going to go into the text archive group. These are some of the other areas that we are responsible for. Our editorial intranet site. We've become involved with photo sales efforts. We've recently migrated our photo sales project from IPPI to Pictopia. We've digitized our microfilm, working on a project to digitize our print photos and our glass plate images. We do work with licensing and research for used content and external productions. And some other sales products that we work with are calendars. We've done annual calendars the last couple of years, and note cards. I forgot to mention here our subscriber advantage program, which is about a year and a half old. I've got a researcher who spends part-time hours basically dealing with emails and phone calls from people who subscribe to the Tribune. And it's a new service that, you know, if you subscribe to the paper, you can go to our website and sign up for this service, and there's some little perks that come with this, and one of those is this research service. And like many other newspapers, we've seen some challenges in recent years at the Chicago Tribune and at the other Tribune newspapers. These are a few of those things. We've lost a few key library managers. Some of you may remember Sandy Levy, who was at the Baltimore Sun for a very long time. Sandy left the Baltimore Sun in January. We also lost Judy Grimsley at the Orlando Sentinel in January, I believe. And that's, you know, that makes a huge difference when you're losing people who've got a long history with the company and have been involved in your library projects for a long time. We've also had some staff positions eliminated and general budget tightening. And these are some specific numbers for the different Tribune papers. Baltimore lost 3 researchers, 2 archivists, 1 assistant director. The director position isn't listed as lost here because one of the researchers moved into that spot and her previous position as a researcher was then eliminated. And they stand at 6 FTEs now. Hartford lost one person and is down to 5. Orlando lost one, down to 6. Newstay lost 2, down to 14.5. No losses at the Advocate in Greenwich Time. They stand at 2 FTEs. Daily Press had no losses. They're at 4. Sun Sentinel had no losses, but I didn't remember the exact number of FTEs. I don't know if Gail's
here.
10.
Okay.
10. Morning Call lost one clerk, and they're down to 5. Los Angeles took a big hit and lost 8 positions recently, which dropped them down to 17. I lost one researcher and one text archive position in Chicago, which dropped me to 18, and then the temporary position would make it 19 for me, at least over the summer. So some survey results. Almost 59% of the respondents said that their organization was privately owned. Only 41% publicly owned. Tribune is a publicly owned company. And we also asked you if your organization was part of the chain, and 69% said yes. So it's a pretty high number of people in the group are part of the chain. This is an interesting question. To what degree are research and archiving services coordinated if you were part of the chain? We asked you this question. 11% said that research was provided at one site or all the properties. And 40% were independent, that is some research services that were provided for all of the group. 38%, this number kind of surprised me, said there was no coordination or no or communication between members of the groups. Within the Tribune Company, our newspapers do have separate research and archive groups within each newspaper. But we make decisions together a lot when we're working on upgrades to systems. And one example of that, most of our newspapers are using SAVE as our text archive system, a few using other systems. And there's a lot of, well, there are some, the majority are also using Merlin as a photo archive. And so we have a few systems where there's kind of the larger portion of the group are using a similar system. Right now, we're also coordinating across the company a project with our newsroom production system. And a number of our sites currently use CCI, and we expect in the next few years that all of the newspapers will move to CCI if they're not currently using it. And we're going to be migrating to CCI's version 6 on a single platform for all of the newspapers, which is an interesting project. You can imagine how hard it is to get that many newspapers to agree on tagging and all the different things that are involved when you're looking at a single platform. We also have a question about contract negotiations and wondered whether they were centralized across your properties. 26.6% said yes, that those negotiations are central. 39% said no, and 34% said that there were some negotiations that were centralized. And that last option is kind of representative of what happens at the Tribune. We do some contracts together and some separate. And we also asked you who handles these negotiations. 81.7% said the library does, which is a pretty overwhelming number. And then we had a mix of other kinds of response. And some people, you know, clearly picked a couple of different things here, because if you're doing some of the contracts yourself, you would, of course, have indicated the library. And some of you also picked the chain administrative office, which is what I did in my case, because we do it both ways. And we asked about the licensing of your content also. Who licenses it? or whether that process is centralized. 32% said yes, it is. 41 said no. And 26% said some of it was centralized, but not all of it. And in response to which department handles licensing of your content, 58% said the library does. And that was the large group there. It's kind of split among the other options here. Within the Tribune Company, the licensing is primarily handled by my boss, actually, who's the deputy managing editor in Chicago. And most of it is very centralized at this point. And I'm going to pass this over to Ann Holcomb now. She's going to look a little bit at who we are and our responsibilities and our customers.
Hi. I'm just going to describe a little bit about the Gazette and then work closely to some more survey results. The Kalamazoo Gazette is also privately owned, and it's part of the Booth Newspapers in Michigan, and it's also part of the Advance Publications. It is a daily paper, and we also have 6 weekly regional papers that cover these different counties that are in southwestern Michigan, which, if you don't know, is right here. And it's also one of the oldest papers in Michigan. It's under some debate. It could possibly be the oldest paper.
Buying a prize for good people.
We have been working on our online print integration. It has been a little problematic, as in the past there was no one in the newsroom who was really looking after our online, and it's done at a different site. So that's something that I've been working on since I've been at the Gazette. And for our information services, there's a staff of 1. But I also, this past year, was able to establish a summer internship program. So we do have that. And then we also have the photo department that supplies a part-time photo archivist. I serve a staff of about 75 in the newsroom, and I also help out the other departments in the company and subscribers. And I'm also the first librarian that they've had since 1992. And the old librarian was left-handed and she filed everything backwards. So there's a challenge there.
Hey, what's wrong with left-handed?
Some of the other services that we provide, maintaining the text archive, supporting news gatherings, so news research, fact checking, that sort of thing. Some basic tech support in the newsroom, and training and trying to start with some knowledge management and cooperate with other departments in the organization for that. Also monitoring and troubleshooting tech feeds to onlive.com, which is our online source. Participating in organization-wide initiatives and committees. Customer service for readers. And in the marketing department with licensing. And now we get to some more of our survey results. I was surprised to see that 60% of us are still called libraries. It is in my title also. Apparently the term isn't quite going away yet. We still do have libraries. And research is also a somewhat popular one. Within the responsibilities, research, obviously everyone does that. This is one where everyone could pick more than one category also. And I was happy to see also that training has 92%. 92% of us are doing training. And I think that it's really important to get in with initiatives in the building with training. For example, at the Gazette, we're still trying to get over to Mac OS 10. And I'm helping out with that, and a good example of how a librarian can help with that is that there are people in our department who are, know every technical aspect of what the transition is going to involve, and they're nice people, but they're not quite people persons. So the managing editor actually selected me instead to be on the board, on the committee for our turnover to a bus time. And Obviously, our revenue-generating activities are also top priorities with responsibilities. And who are our patients? Who do we serve? Of course, 100% of the new staff. And we also serve other departments within the within our companies. And I would think that probably people serve the different departments when you're performing different functions. So, for example, obviously when you're doing news gathering, you're helping the reporters and editors. When you're marketing, you're doing the licensing, that type of thing. And how does your staff contribute to news gathering or news content? And I was happy to see also that 82% of us are providing content for our newspapers. So we are having tangible products that come out of the library, which when it comes to stating your importance to the administration, that's always a good resource to have. And we also look at how frequently do people receive assignments and reference requests, and the different forms in which they receive them. And email was the most popular, and of course telephones and walk-in also. I think that a lot of this is affected probably by where your library is located in the building. For myself, I just sit in the newsroom, and I tend to have more frequent patrons on the immediate side of the newsroom where I sit, because people don't want to walk all the way to the other side of the newsroom. So I don't get as many reference requests from the other side. So I wonder if it's interesting to think about how much space might be affecting those numbers. Maybe they just email me, I guess. And are your staff members responsible for specialized functions? This is one of the questions where we had people describe what their staff members do. And some of the top divisions were between researchers and archivists. So like half of the staff would be research and half of the staff would do archiving. But a lot of people did add that they do cross-training and filling in on vacations and weekends and shifts and all those sort of things. So, and I was thinking about that, and I think it's probably pretty beneficial, because if you have a researcher who's digging up things in the archive, if they know how the archive works and they know all the quirks, and they'll have a quicker time of getting through it. So I will turn it over to Mike.
Hello. I'm going to tell you a little bit about Post-Dispatch. I'm actually here representing Insights Library, so I prefer to think of myself as a big library, but I am dwarfed by Jenny and Deborah, so I have to accept my new Insights Library. St. Louis Post-Dispatch is a privately owned company. We were recently acquired. We used to be Pulitzer, Inc., and we were recently acquired by Lee Enterprises last June. So we're in a bit of a... We have an environment of change. The emphasis is on generating revenue. In fact, our corporate prayer card, do you all have those little, the five goals of your company or things like that? We have one, we call it corporate prayer card. And the top one is revenue. The second one is readership and circulation. Local news is third, and online strength is fourth, and cost controls is fifth. So two of the five are money. We have a money problem. There's a strong focus on local news and relationship with the online product. And there are very little interaction between properties. Are there any Lee librarians here? Has anyone seen any other Lee librarians? There are other Lee librarians. There's 50 newspapers in the Lee chain. Really, only three of them are mid-sized with circulation over 100,000. The others are pretty small papers. We have a little library listserv, and we communicate pretty regularly, and we get along well. But that's just because we're librarians. It has nothing to do with any corporate directive or any effort to try to get us to play well together. In my department, the biggest change has been what the staff does. When I arrived there a couple of years ago, I really had 10 FTEs that were doing nothing but archiving the news content. So we took a look at some of the efficiencies there, and we rejiggered a few things. And we ended up, so now I only have five staffers that work on the archive, so I essentially doubled my staff without actually hiring anyone. So now I have one director, one car specialist who also serves as my assistant librarian, or my assistant director, excuse excuse me. I have 3 researchers, 1 database supervisor, and 4 archivists. The database supervisor supervises the other archivists and takes care of all the administration of the system. The department is down from a peak of 17, and I think about 1987 they hit that number. We were at 12 in 2000, and we're at 10 now. The department has 4 primary responsibilities. We are in charge of archives and collections. We do research. We have a heavy car presence in the paper now, and we're just getting into training. We have several training courses, but it's still in its nascent stages. Our emphasis is on customer service in my department. I think it's important to our health and actually all of our department's health that every time someone has an interaction with our department, it's a satisfactory one, so I really stress that with the staff. And we're a department in transition. With the corporate changes and the changes that have happened since I've been there, I really have to applaud my staff for dealing with so much change in such a short period of time. So on to the survey. We asked you if you thought your staff was at risk of being reduced. 53% said yes, 46% said no. I think we should all feel at risk, personally. That's basically why we're having this panel here today. It's because we view this as a significant risk. We also asked if you were at risk, why? General company downsizing, this is another area where they could check multiple things, so it's not going to add up to 100, but 66% said company downsizing, and under the other, they see at the bottom, 33%. Those answers were usually related to finances. They were budgetary considerations or losing FTEs. So to me, that kind of sums up that 99% of us are worried about financing our departments. We asked if you've cut services in the past 5 years due to reductions in your staff. 45% said yes, 54% said no. This is my personal opinion that should be a last resort. I mean, I know in the reality of the world, sometimes you have to cut services, but I would recommend it be the last thing to do. Then we asked what those services were if you cut them. Hours of availability was by far the biggest one, and I think that we can all associate with that. Most of us are working 7 days a week, and the papers that I know of that cut back had to cut back to weekend stuff. Were any of your hires during the past 5 years difficult to get permission to fill? I was really surprised by this. 27% said yes, 41% said no, and 31% said they've not been permitted any hires in the past 5 years. But an astounding 41, which is actually more than 50% of the survey, those people surveyed, just skipped the question entirely. So this is really only half the audience that was surveyed. The only explanation I can think for skipping is that they couldn't hire anyone, so they thought it was not relevant. And I was also surprised there's a number of no responses to this question, because even in the best of times, I've always had to justify every position I fill. How about you guys? Yes? Raise your hands. I want to see if it's going to be 41%. Oh, bless you. Some of you are very lucky, I guess. If you did have to justify the position, what arguments did you use to help justify it? Stats and usage were by far the biggest weapon used. A lot of people keep stats, not only on the money they make, but the usage that the research staff gets. And others justify the need by citing that they absolutely had to have tasks done. I mean, you know, the stories have to get archived, things like that. One woman said, I think she said, who's going to put all those books away or something like that? And then some people have taken on extra job duties as a compromise, which I certainly applaud as well. That was a slide that my notes didn't print out. Good to tell. Would you hesitate to discipline or fire an underperforming employee for fear of not being able to replace that employee? 73% said no, and I want to applaud that figure. I think that it's probably the worst thing we can do is to continue to keep bad people on in the department. It's bad for us in so many ways. It affects morale, it affects our respect, it affects the value of the department. you have to think, do you want that one person representing what your department is? And do you or others on your staff participate in news-wide or organization-wide committees, initiatives or committees, excuse me? 75% said yes. Another big old bravo for that. Participation enhances our reputation in so many ways. It gets us out there. We get more face time with people. It's just good for your department PR. I had a rather amusing response. I hope I have it. Oh, yeah, I have it. It's on the next slide, sorry. And if yes, describe the initiative for committees, and we have narrative responses to these. There were a total of 42 people that responded to this with a wide variety of involvement, not necessarily library-type chores, but youth commission, ergonomic committees, internets, marketing initiatives, editorial boards, etc. The one response that I thought was amusing is, a camel is a horse designed by a committee. I have better things to do. Well, I built a few camels in my day. And what I have to say to that is I think the benefits far outweigh the negatives of being on a camel committee. And I'd rather ride a camel that I had some say in designing than one that I had no say at all. How would you describe your relationship with your organization's IT department? 62% said very close. That's a very good number. I think by the nature of our business, we happen to usually be one of the places where technology comes in first into the newsroom, so it's kind of a natural relationship that we should foster. And how do you introduce your new technology, such as a new archive system, to your users? Training sessions by far, the leader here, of course, that's a good thing. Open houses, email announcements, these are all good practices. Some of the answers under other were internet announcements, research blogs, and verbal announcements at meetings, excuse me. There was a mention, several people mentioned that they by non-library trainers, and Adrian, please don't take this as any offense, but I think my paper made a mistake by, when we relaunched Nexus to the newsroom, we used the Nexus trainers to come in and do most of the training, because we had to train 300 people inside of a week. And the researchers participated in that, but in hindsight, I think it would have been better for my department if the researchers had done all of that training. We had the Nexus trainer train us on how to train. What is your department's role when the newsroom undergoes a major change in technology? This is very interesting. It seems that almost everyone was involved at some point or another. The people that answered under other with the 15% basically said that they really didn't get involved in things that didn't involve the library. And now I pass the torch back to Deborah.
Question that we asked all of you was whether the majority of your new staff have access to commercial online services. 72.1% said yes, they do, which I think that's wonderful. And this is a really interesting number because it's so significant. And since we're clearly not the only source of information anymore in our organizations, I guess there are a number of questions that come up and make us all wonder, or hopefully make us wonder, whether we're working to expand our role. If 72% of our reporters and editors are doing a lot of the online service research on their own, at least part of the time, are we expanding our role to take on some new duties? Are we out there offering our help, our expertise in research systems to those reporters? Are we taking on new roles as teachers and trainers or consultants within our organizations? I think those are all things that we need to be looking at and doing right now. We asked if you have a newsroom intranet. 85% said yes, so that's great. I'm just really delighted to see that high number here, since I think the intranets are such an important component of what we do, and they're a great vehicle for use in communicating and rolling out new research tools, new archive tools to our people. We also asked what you included on your internet sites, and these are some of the responses here. No surprise, 94% of us said we include web links. 75% of us include databases. 55.8% include online services, links to LexisNexis or Factiva or others. A lot of people have book or periodical catalogs on their intranets. 34.6% said they have blogs. A lot of other miscellaneous materials were mentioned, and 15% said they have wikis on their sites. I'm just wondering if we want to take a poll within the room. How many people have blogs on their intranets? Can we see a show of hands? Okay, 5 or 6. How many have wikis? Okay, good. We ask people what their role is with the intranet, and the big number here was 73% said they contribute to it, 65% said they manage the intranet, and just a handful were not involved with it. 11.5% here said other, and I'm not sure exactly what the other was in this case. So. Okay, and I'm going to pass this over to Ginny. She's going to talk about how we use our websites.
I'm curious if the survey responses sort of confirm what you thought was happening in our industry, or if this is surprising. I think in many ways it does both. It confirms them. It's also some of the things have been fairly surprising. The component that I want to look at is how we work with our websites, because our tradition, at least in newspapers, is, of course, and that's actually what all of us are speaking to today, but has been with the print product. And as we know, so much of our readership now is coming to us from the web, so how we interact with the web departments is extremely important. Okay, how do I get rid of this?
Just move the arrow and click on the light.
That's scary.
No, that'll, yeah. Just click.
Okay, there we go. Okay, so first question we asked in the survey was what role do you play in your website? And not surprisingly, 60% of us are providing the text archive. We had a discussion at breakfast this morning when we were talking about our panel about archiving web pages, and Mike was saying, I've been trying to get a discussion going on this on NewsLib, and I'm just hit with deafening silence, and I think that's because we're really not overall doing archiving of pages themselves. Archiving web-only content, which could be photos that only appear on the web, stories or graphics that are only on the web, that's a higher number. We all do, at least over half of us, provide research to our web staff, and certainly we do. In fact, the journal, our afternoon newspaper, closed several years ago, and the web, in a way, has taken the place of the journal, because our questions early in the morning are from the web staff who are dealing with breaking news. So we're staffed as early as 7:30 in the morning to work with them early in the morning. And almost a third of us provide content, which is great. And I know in our case, in some of the other really important questions, what we're doing is providing timelines or providing what turn into sidebars in the print product the next day. So almost 10% of us are managing web pages, and I think that's really good experience, and it's good to be necessary to your website.
there were some interesting other answers. Some people are blogging on the website, which is great. Are gathering multimedia, doing gathering statistics, being involved in the sort of the gathering of the metrics for your website, adding metadata, being involved in your site search functionality certainly is important. And of course, corrections are with us no matter where we are. But if you look at the percentage of staff time that's devoted to web activities, it's not very much. It's less than 25%. Less than 25%, 85% of the respondents said they spend less than 25%. It goes down from there. So I think certainly some of that's just a function of what our core activities and core responsibilities have been, and the question is, how do we integrate these new responsibilities into what we do? Now, another interesting question: do you provide measurable revenue for your organization? And it's a mixed bag again. Over 85% said yes. The majority of that revenue comes from text or transcript archives. Image and video sales are almost half. More than half of us do content licensing or permissions. A smaller number do have online stores. And the other included microfilm revenue and fee-based research. But look at this. So about how much revenue generated annually? 62%, less than 100,000. I think that's something that really needs some work. We need to figure out how to contribute to our company's bottom line. And it's going to vary according to the size of the newspaper. It's going to vary according to the size of the staff and what your responsibilities are. But that was staggering to me, quite frankly. So if you look at, say, from 500,000 or less, that's what, 76, 88%? So I think it's just, well, we can talk about that some more, but I'd like to know how you guys feel about that. And now, I will turn the mic back over to Deborah, who is going to take us through some of the sort of free-form questions that we asked, and we really appreciate these responses.
Okay, this was the first of the free-form questions that we asked. Who outside of your department can make decisions regarding your department's future? And again, this was a multiple answer kind of question, so you could pick more than one response here. The highest number went to the editor. 87.5% of people said the editor can make decisions. And I'm assuming that people also were kind of including the managing editor, maybe deputy managing editors, in that kind of response. We also have a big response for the publisher, 85.7%. Corporate headquarters, 51% of us said corporate headquarters can make decisions about our department's future. And then smaller numbers for the other responses here. Readers, 23% of us said that readers help to influence decisions about our department's future. The other two open-ended questions were, what changes or innovations have you made that improved or protected the status of your department? And what do you feel are the most important steps you can take to ensure your department's survival in the future? And as I was thinking about the answers and responses we received from all of you, I tried to organize them into groups that would make it easier for us to look at those. And just to make it easy to remember, I use the word library to cluster these strategies and wonderful ideas that we heard from you. So the first strategy I listed was lead. And I'm going to ask everyone on the panel here to sort of contribute more specific ideas as we walk through these strategies. But to lead, know your stuff, become an expert in your newsroom. Help your staff to develop teacher and trainer kinds of roles and empower your reporters. I think sometimes people are afraid to give too much away to the reporters, and I guess I tend to take the opposite approach. I feel like by empowering them, it doesn't mean that I'm losing power or my department is losing power, because we need to be moving into some of these other new roles. Be a leader in the newsroom as well as the library. Get involved with the big newsroom projects that are going on, because, as you know, they're going to impact your work as well. And you can make some great contributions to those projects. Does anyone want to add to that?
Is this one? I think so. Is this on? Can you hear me? No. Do I have to turn it on?
I think it's on.
Well, something. I'm sure you're doing. Can you hear it? Now? Okay. All right. Actually, our esteemed leader, Jim Hunter, had sent us a really good document that I think should probably go up on the website along with our presentation. And one of the things that he said was, does your library have momentum and velocity? If you do the same thing year after year, your business stays the same at best. The library is a business, and it must change to grow. And I thought that was actually a good thing.
I think for me, just like eavesdropping a lot, actually, and finding out about like new initiatives and you know, new upgrades and big stories that are coming up. I just try to like have my fingers in a lot of pots around the newsroom and really get in on the ground floor, like before anything else happens. And I really like the old saying. I think it's a saying where like a good, I think it was about a secretary, like a good secretary like knows what you want before you do. But I think that kind of applies to librarians who are leaders, because so I try to know what they want before they know and just get in at the very beginning of projects.
I've actually got a question for you, because you're one person, and I know you've got an intern right now, but how do you do it all? I think that's the question.
I just try to prioritize things day to day.
I guess in my, can you hear me? Yeah. I guess in my case, I'm working on developing the status of the researchers in the newsroom. As I mentioned before, we really didn't do a lot of research before, and they have nascent identities, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, and just pushing them out there into the newsroom and then making them go talk to reporters and work closely on projects is helping a lot.
Great. The second strategy listed is innovate. Find some new, more efficient ways to do all the old things. Can you save money? Can you make money? Upgrade the quality of your research services, your internet. Contribute content to the newspaper if you're not, or increase it if you already are. Find creative solutions to newsroom problems. With regard to the first item here, new and more efficient ways to do the old things, I think one way we've taken advantage of this strategy with the Tribune Company is by looking at group subscriptions and ways to consolidate some of our spending and our accounts across the newspapers. This has meant, in a number of cases, that some of the smaller newspapers were able to get access to research tools or subscriptions that they wouldn't normally have been able to afford. And that's been an incredibly valuable thing for them to have. Other comments?
I think in terms of innovation, one thing that I try to do is just to innovate the mindset of people in the newsroom. Both in terms of technology and moving into the 21st century, and also just to have an awareness of the value of librarians and information staff.
I think, too, getting sort of out of the traditional roles that we play is really important. I mentioned the Cox Academy sessions that we do. And this, I cannot tell you how elaborate this is. It's very serious. And if you don't get your 20 hours or your 30 hours, you get what's known as the letter from Julia, which Julia's the editor, and it's a bad thing. So what we've done this year, and this is the second year we've done it, is that you can sign up for Cox Academy courses on our intranet, and Jennifer Ryan, our deputy, created the database in FileMaker, and the training editor can actually add courses and add course descriptions to it. And another new feature that we added is that you can keep up with how many classes you've taken, how many hours you've taken so far, how many hours you have that you've already signed up for, and people really use it a lot. So for a sort of a newsroom mandated kind of thing, if you can play a role in making that happen, I think it's really valuable.
I will mention one thing we've done. It's not really a big thing, but it's kind of fun. We have little 15-minute training sessions once a week in the newsroom conference center, and we had a contest to name it. We call it the drive-through. So, and it's just little quick hits on information. 15 minutes on Google search tips, 15 minutes and 15 great sites, or 15 minutes and tips on how to use Nexus, things like that. And people have responded really well. We get good attendance, and we get a lot of compliments because we're respectful of their time, because we're not dragging them in for 3 hours at a time.
That's a great idea. The drive-through set.
Yeah.
Okay, the next strategy I listed is be bold. Step out of your comfort zone and tackle new projects. Develop some new skills. Think like a journalist. And I think most of the people in this room probably already do that. And if you don't, I think that's a very critical thing for you to be doing right now. Promote your library's resources and capabilities within your newsroom. Again, if they don't know you're there, you become invisible.
I'm a graphic assistant report, and sometimes when they want me to take on another responsibility or another job, I usually see it as an opportunity to learn another tool or something else to do, but I always say, well, what are the priorities? Because I have so much on my plate, what do you think are the essential things? So I let her choose the things that I will drop. I mean, because it's just, I'm alone. I physically can't work. So in the way, and then, so I sort of work with them for them to establish what they want the most.
And this is a conversation you're having with your boss? Is that,
yes.
That
yes. Yes. Which is fine, because I should say, well, this is not, you know,
if
I drop something, people say, oh, you're not doing this anymore. Mm-hmm. And I say, well, when I get this packed down, or when I can, I'd be glad to do it when things are sort of simmered down and organized, I hope to be able to take that up again.
And it heightens your awareness of what you're doing.
Well, quite often, I don't get any feedback until I stop doing something. Mm-hmm. So this is obviously also, because people don't give you kudos, it doesn't mean what you're doing is not appreciated or valued.
It's much easier to complain than say something
else.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm happy to do it all, but you have to establish what they want. Another thing to do is I look at a lot of different sources, and so I may need something for the editor of the gray sheet for a story, but it's from a source that she doesn't usually read.
Yeah.
And or I'll send it to them. They're very grateful to have that extra set of eyes out there. I mean, yeah. I'm not committing myself to doing this every day.
Sure.
But they, you know, so I feel like I'm, you know, working with them, and they know what I want, so I think that really helps.
I like that. I'm going to try that the next time I get a new responsibility. I'm going
to
try it.
Because you can't work any more than 12 hours a day. Sorry. I don't have to play soccer anymore, so I don't have... It's only my husband I have to feed dinner. But you have to say, look, everything is valuable, but right now, what would you like to be done?
Prioritizing is an extremely important
thing. And they get to make a choice.
Very important.
I don't know how many of you heard Bruce Rosenstein speak yesterday, but I thought there was a real interesting comment he had included from Peter Drucker, and it was something to the effect of do what needs to get done, not what you want to do.
Yes, that's very hard. Drop things that you enjoy doing. And to keep on doing them, then that's not your core responsibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is incredibly hard, especially when you're a staff of one.
Yeah.
Vanity.
And I think I know this is something we all do, and I think it's so important we underestimate its importance, and that's just marketing by walking around. You know, I mean, when people see you, I can't tell you how many times somebody will see me in the hall, or, you know, God forbid, they'll see me in the restaurant, and they'll say, you know, I've been meaning to ask you about so-and-so, you know, and it's like, okay, let me, you know, now I have short-term, you know, memory issues and stuff. I'm like, let me write this down so I don't forget it before I, you know, get back to the, yeah.
So she comes out of the restroom and wants to know
something. That's right.
One thing Mary Dawn Bates said, be enthusiastic, loving your job and being enthusiastic about it is contagious. Mm-hmm. And people will ask you for help, if they know they come to you, and you're going to say, that's really an interesting idea, or that sounds like a fun project, you know, and you have to build in a comfort zone, so they don't feel like it's, you know.
I think especially with reporters, because, I mean, they're passionate about whatever they're working on, and
exactly.
if you're sharing their passion, then they're more likely to come back.
So, you know, every day I just ask them, say, oh, what are you writing this week? And the floodgates open. You know, I mean, you just have to say, oh, what's your story are you doing today? And you just learn so much because they're so into it and they're dying to tell somebody. And no one asks them, you know, about part of me for today or something like that. You know, it's just because I'm dying to have someone to tell this to.
Yeah, I think we're in a unique position to play that role, to consult with them and give them reinforcement for their story ideas and to contribute to it.
Just to know that somebody's interested in it besides their manager.
Mm-hmm. Right. Another thing about being bold is I'm trying to encourage my staff to be more proactive and suggest story ideas to reporters because they really are the smartest guys in the room. I have a really smart staff, and they have more RSS feeds between the three of them than, you know, the whole newsroom does. And when they see things, I encourage them to email it to the reporters. They really appreciate the tip. It's their job to fill the paper tomorrow. Maybe they're having a bad day. I have one tip, and I hate to brag twice on this, but a guy just happened to notice that they were coming out with those two technologies for the new DVDs. And the features writer asked him to write it up as a little brief. It got on the budget. The managing editor saw it on the budget. And the guy ended up writing a 1A story. So one of my researchers wrote a 1A story based on this proactive thinking. So it's a real beneficial thing to do.
Cool. Okay. The next strategy we have listed is go for the return on an investment. Find some revenue sources. Invest wisely in the products and projects that will give the most bang for your buck and result in a good return. Look for new revenue streams. And invest your time wisely, too. Develop your organizational skills, project and time management skills to help you and your staff cope with an ever-growing workload. Any comments? Okay.
Well, I think sometimes revenue streams can find you. One thing that happened recently is that on our website, we had a multimedia a flash presentation of one of the assistant bureau chiefs flying with the Blue Angels in an F-18, and there was a lipstick camera, you know, honed in on his face the whole time. And this video lasted; it was cut down to like 7 minutes from about 50 minutes of raw video. And he like passed out three times. You know, it was just great. You know, I mean, it was just like. This poor guy. It was like, yeah, it was bad. But people loved it. In fact, they loved it so much that all the hits that we got exceeded our bandwidth for, you know, a certain period of time, and so we had to pay, like, you know, $20,000 because of, you know, having so much traffic. But then we started getting requests from people who wanted this video, but they didn't want to just link to it on the web. They wanted it on a DVD so that they could, you know, maybe use it embed it in a presentation. I couldn't honestly wrap my mind around exactly why they wanted it on a DVD. You know, unless they wanted to put it, you know, take it home and put it on their, you know, plasma, you know, TV screen. And so we did. We worked with the multimedia editor, and it had to be totally recreated, basically, in a format that we could use on DVD. But we sent it to the guy who teaches flight survival training at Miramar so that he could use it with his, like, the Top Gun, you know, guys. And we did it. We sent it to another Navy guy who was doing sleep research, because when the reporter would, like, he'd pass out, and then he'd, you know, wake up and, you know, look around, and he'd have dreams, and those few seconds that he was out. So, you know, we had that. We had you know, all sorts of pilots who wanted this. So I think it's just being able to seize the moment and you know, have an infrastructure so that you can respond to a demand that you don't even anticipate. Well, actually, you can. What they had to do on the website is that they had to redo the one that's on the website so that it didn't take so much bandwidth. But it's still not easy to find. You can search the site, and the first link that you'll find when you search is the video. The second link that you'll find, because we do the super searching on the site, is the order form to buy the DVD. So, yeah.
I think in terms of revenue also, it should show to your managers the importance of archiving and, you know, having an easily searchable archive, having records that, you know, have integrity, preserving the archives, because, I mean, that's a huge... I mean, once you're selling it, you want to give people a good product. You want to give them something that they'll value. And if your archive is a mess, then you're not gonna have customers.
One of the revenue streams that I've been looking for about 4.5 years now in Chicago is related to a collection of glass plates that I have from the early 1900s. And this glass has been sitting there and sitting there and sitting there in a bad environment for a long time. And finally, about a year or so ago, I was able to create a cool room in our basement archive where the temperature and humidity are now controlled, which has bought these glass plates a little more time. But the money to digitize these plates keeps sliding. But I'm very excited this afternoon because I just this morning got an email from the editorial finance person back home who says that they need today, yes, my additional justification and risks of not doing this project explanation from me. So I'm hoping that this means, because it's so urgent that they have to have it today, that there's a good chance it might actually go through now. So keep your fingers crossed. The next strategy is anticipate, and we talked a little bit about this a few minutes ago. Don't wait for them to come to you. Anticipate what your user needs. Do they want better research? Do they want faster tools or help with a long-term project? You need to jump in. You need to be out there offering your help with those projects. Any examples from the group?
I think definitely using things like wikis in the newsroom, anticipating and, you know, reading and keeping up on new technologies. And I'm not just saying that because I like to read blogs either. I think if you, you know, you're learning every day, and you should update yourself every day on what's happening in the world of, especially in the world of technology, to see what new edge you can bring to your newsroom.
I don't know how many of you went to see Mary Ellen Bates' presentation just before this one. It was great and had a lot of food for thought, and one of the things she talked about was the library 2.0 and make it like web 2.0, make it more collaborative, which would be with blogs, with wikis, with fun, having your reporters rate resources, or having them, you know, add their own, the websites that they think work best for whatever their area is. I think there's a lot of opportunity there to come up with some good ideas, and I think we always have to be looking at how we can change what we do and keep up with what's happening outside of our own small arena, because our reporters' lives don't end when they, you know, leave their job. They're on the web. They're doing, especially with newer, younger reporters. I don't think we can look dated to them. I think we have to be, as Anne was saying, you know, we have to have the same edge that they see other places.
The next strategy is relevance. You know, we're all here at the SLA conference attending a lot of sessions to broaden our minds and learning from our colleagues, and clearly a great way to stay relevant. You want to be learning about new research, new technology tools. Be the first to advocate their use at your site. A few people have already mentioned this. Are you using blogs or wikis? Be sensitive to how reporters use research and discover ways to package it or communicate it. Teach them what they need and what to learn. Any other comments?
I'm not sure if this exactly fits into relevance, but I wanted to talk about it. I know there was some discussion a while back on the NewsLib list about trying to start awards for research and, you know, giving some kind of awards either here, but I'm also thinking about if you have internal awards in your newsroom, which we have a couple that are
Does
a lot of fun.
Does anyone do that now? Can we see a show of hands if you have research awards within your newsroom? Only two?
Three. But I think we should all start something like that, because I mean, it shows the importance. It's a good, like, concrete thing of showing, you know, and we could give them. And you know, for the best research and for reporters, I think that would be.
Did any of y'all do anything like at our newspaper? We do something called the Best Quarter. And the news staff gets together, you know, four times a year, and department heads nominate what they think is the best work from their department. So I just darn well make sure that we've got some examples of research, or mm-hmm. even one time we had a overnight text archivist who found a really glaring error, and they work on from page proofs, so he was able to contact the sports department, get that fixed, and they were able to replace the page before it actually went to press. So that was pretty cool, and that got into the Best of Quarter. In fact, the sports copy editor nominated the text archivist, which I thought was really cool. So.
We had a researcher fill out who died earlier this year. In my spirit of humor and collaboration and skills, we decided we would form an award that would recognize those qualities of Israel. I think that broadens the whole picture. And coming from us, I think it's a great deal.
Mm-hmm. Sounds great. Okay, and the last strategy we've listed is why not? Are there newsroom projects that are withering on the vine that you could take on? You know, I think sometimes there are things that come up in the newsroom and we don't really think that maybe we could be involved with those or share those, manage those projects. But I'm convinced that we librarians are some of the best project managers in the world. You know, we have incredible experience with project management,
And I think when we see chances to take on some of these things, we need to jump at them and make them our own and really show people what we can do with it. Any other comments? Okay, we're going to open it up to questions. And Jim has his hand up.
Should we make a prayer card out of this?
Why not?
And I want to just shamelessly steal from Nora Paul's handout at the CE on Sunday. She had a great quote from James Thurber, and it was, "It is better to know some of the questions than all of the answers." And I thought that was very true. So. Anybody else have any questions? Anybody say, are you thinking to yourself, yeah, you've got, you know, 24 people, or yeah, you got, you know, 18 people. Yeah, you can do that. You know, so I'd really like to hear from some of the folks who are, you know, are in one or two or three person libraries and how you're coping.
Okay, well, I don't have any answers. I'm asking a question. I'm interested, you know, among us, how do we, like, I'm only me, library staff. How time management, you know, I mean, just little tricks that would really, like someone told me in our sales people, she said, when I'm working on something or project, I don't answer the phone. Mm-hmm. And I think, well, that's brilliant, but I'm doing it this certain thing which takes longer than it should if people call and help them. Maybe I should just not answer the phone. And I could do this, yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. things that. That I really would appreciate that librarians telling you their secrets because, or when they get them, because, or they're what they found useful, is because I think we really need them.
Mm-hmm. Whenever I do something that's deadline based at all, I tell people that I'm turning off my phone. Mm-hmm. And I think another thing that I do for time management is I structure my day. Like, I have certain, I'm one of those, like, I like rituals and routines too, so it helps. Like, I just enjoy it. Like, I will do, you know, I have one part of the day that I do archiving, and I have one part of the day that I work on deadline-based things, and I have one part of the day that I work on, you know, long-term projects and planning and things, or committees and stuff like that. So I try to just always, you know, even if, well, sometimes huge things come up, but, you know, usually whenever I have a normal day, I try to always structure it like that.
I'm the worst person in the world.
Interruption. I mean, I'm a two-person library. Mm-hmm. I try to structure my day that same way. And, you know, there's two of us trying to do it. But there's always that person. And I mean, just before I came to the conference, it was like 2 days before I find out about a major project that they can have the newsroom, someone in the newsroom knows about, for at least a week. And then they came to me 2 days before and said, we need you to do this. So it's like, stop dead. This has got to be done now.
True, you can structure your day, but you can't structure everyone else.
That's what I mean.
And see, Allison said the opposite thing, because I'm the worst person in the world as far as managing my own personal time. I mean, in fact, if we have a seminar on that, I'll be the first to attend next year. But I do manage other people's time. And what I mean by that is that I'm not micromanaging their day, but when I see someone struggling with priorities and they don't, like you have described, they don't know what to do, they've got too many things to do, then it's very helpful for me as their manager or their co-workers to step in and say, hey, don't do anything with this for an hour. I'll get all the calls, I'll get all the phones, or, you know, so just to slice time out for people to do projects is important if you're able to do that. Mm-hmm. But I, total failure with myself, though.
Yeah, we do the same thing. If I've got someone, one of my researchers is working on a project that really requires more concentration, I will take him or her off the phones and block out a couple of hours for them to deal with that research project. And I do something similar. You know, if I'm in the middle of something that I really need to be thinking about, and thinking, you know, having time to think is really difficult to do. But we have to do it. And, you know, usually what I try to do if I'm trying to think about, you know, a report that I'm writing or a memo that I'm writing and I need to really concentrate, I will, you know, turn off the phone, turn off the email, and just really focus on that for an hour or whatever I need. What did you all think? Ginny had that slide about the revenue that was produced. And I'm agreeing totally. I was a little surprised to see such a large response to the under $100,000 mm-hmm. range there. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I was wondering about if the survey differentiated those revenues by circulation size, because that would be, like under $100,000 probably is bad for a small newspaper, and maybe next year on the survey you could that. Mm-hmm.
And in this year's survey too, one of the things that we discovered is that more than half of the respondents were from a newsroom that was like 200 or fewer. So I think that is a big piece of it. But I still think that even in the revenue that is generated overall by a smaller newspaper. One thing it didn't address is, really quantify what the sources of revenue were. I don't know if there were some misunderstandings in terms of what do we consider revenue. So, I don't know. Maybe that question needs a little jiggering the next time we're in.
Can you offer any thoughts on like benchmarks for revenue? Like, what would you consider a good circulation number and a good healthy revenue?
You need to cross-check those numbers by circulation size against the revenue.
Right.
To get something valid.
Right.
I think what she's really saying is there's a threshold there.
Right.
Below the circulation threshold, below which you're not going to get any revenue.
Right. And I think, too, it could be that part of what Deborah was talking about in the who handles the content licensing? Is that a function of the library department or not? Is the the copyright issues, are those handled by the library? So I think part of it is a function of what your areas of responsibility are.
But I'm wondering if we as an industry have any, or when I say industry, I mean like selling archives, do we have any sort of control over benchmarks? Do we have any numbers that say, this is the kind of revenue I can expect from vendors like Nexus, this is the kind of revenue, or not expect, here's what I should be aiming for. Can we share the information with each other, or not really?
I don't have any benchmark, but, and this is really a seat of my pants kind of instinct, but the papers that I've known of where I knew their revenues, it seems that there's almost an obvious correlation between circulation and dollar, but it's almost dollar to dollar. Like my newspaper's daily circulation is about $277,000 a year, and we make about between $300 and $350 in revenue every year. So, and I've seen that at other papers, there seems to be a dollar correlation between the daily circulation and how much you can expect to bring in. I imagine that drops off significantly when you get below 100,000.
And the other thing, too, is that you don't know if in these figures, if the revenue that the library is generating includes something like, say, photo sales or photo permissions, because often that's something that's handled by the photo department. So it's really hard, I think, to arrive at a true standards. But maybe, Barbara, that's some research that could come out.
Yeah.
They advertise more.
They
advertise more for themselves than they would for you.
Yeah. Do y'all have a lot of like house ads in your paper or banner ads on the web or do what? So we're actually in a really weird spot because on the one hand we've been doing some analysis of the unpaid space in our newspaper, and part of that includes house ads. So we've been on a campaign to reduce that. So I've been working with the guy who has been who is actually the editing and presentation editor, oddly enough, at the newspaper. And we're, when I get back, we're going to be meeting with marketing because they've been actually bumping some of our ads that neither he nor I really intended to be bumped. We were what they were going for was ads that advertise, say, the home and garden section, and you see it in like five different configurations in the same paper where the production desk is just throwing it in there. And in this one case, somebody asked the supervisor of the production department, so why does this ad keep getting in the paper? And the response was, he just really likes that picture. He just really likes that girl. It's like, oh, that's creepy. So I think there's some efficiencies that we all have to bring, you know, across our organization, but we also have to look at the unintended consequences of those as well. Try to figure out how to make it not so painful.
You should also take a look at how your no one knows better than librarians, you know, what categories you feel like it should appear under. And, you know, maybe with the permission of your managing editor, of course, you know, maybe speak to your business folks and just get a list of where your content is. Make it, you know, your business to know where your business is being done and take a look at some of those products. I know we did this, and asking a vendor to re-index your content is, that's a win-win. They're eager to do that because they want, you know, obviously more views of that content because that's more royalties for them as well as you. We were really surprised when we took a good look at where our content was and how it was indexed. There was definitely yes.
Where are you from? What's your...
I'm leaving from my friend, Christian Paul.
Okay. Anything else before we go? Well, thank you very much for coming to our session, and I hope this is helped. And I think maybe this can spark some good discussions on NewsLib and some other, give us some more food for thought. So, thanks very much.
Congratulations. Good to have you. Good to see you here.
Hey there.
Of course. Good to see you all. Good program. Oh, yeah. Hope that this can go through more analysis, maybe with the statistical packages.
Yes.
Or these assessments to go to this whole revenue idea. The problem being very difficult to get through this.
It was actually with the woman there who I worked with at UMI when I was a newspaper.
partner with the archiving that happens over time.
She has a but anyways, she had gone there, and so it was really interesting to see Ann Arbor. How did they find a sign to hire a librarian?
Where's the little, is that still running?
Here's the little thing.
All right, and stop.